This podcast is sponsored by Innovid. This is Ari Paparo from Architecture Media. I'm here to tell you about the Harmony Initiative from Innovid. Innovid believes that TV should be open for everyone and controlled by no one, and the time to make that vision a reality is now. That's why Innovid created Harmony, an industry-wide initiative to address the biggest challenges facing CTV advertising today. By optimizing at the infrastructure level, Harmony aims to improve efficiency, enhance transparency and control, and increase ROI, all while reducing carbon emissions and providing better viewing experiences for all. Find out more and get involved at innovid.com/harmony.
Welcome to the AdTech God Pod, your window into the world of advertising technology and the people behind it. I'm your host, AdTech God. Welcome back to another episode of the AdTech God Pod, where I interview some of the most influential people in the industry. I'm your host, AdTech God. Today, I'm thrilled to have Lizzie Black, the Vice President of National Sales at Cargo. Lizzie is a powerhouse in the advertising industry, boasting an impressive career that spans across leading companies such as Meredith, Hearst, Velasys, and Federated Media. Known for her exceptional leadership skills and steadfast commitment to building meaningful relationships, Lizzie has carved a niche for herself as a sales leader whose hard work and dedication have led to remarkable achievements. For those who don't know Cargo, it is known for its innovative mobile advertising solution. It excels in creating, managing, and optimizing campaigns for brands and agencies with a focus on high-quality creative ad formats with premium content. I'm looking forward to chatting with Lizzie and to hear more about her journey, her strategies for relationship building and sales, and her insights into the future of our industry and of Cargo. Lizzie, welcome to the AdTech God Pod.
How are you, God?
I am great. I am great. I think we start off the year pretty good.
That was such a serious intro.
Yeah, you know, it's just what I do, Lizzie. You know, I've been trying to mix it up a little bit, but I just keep going back to what a great way to start a relationship than with a really good introduction.
I love it. And also, just for anyone listening, I thought I had met the God before, since no one knows who he is, but I haven't, he told me. So now I'm really thrown off. I sort of thought you were going to be at Marco Island, but you weren't, right?
Never know. I also tell everyone I haven't met them. So the reality is
okay. All right.
I'm trying to think what podcast number you are, because I think that's 20 something people. I mean, at some point I'm going to cross paths with people I've met or interacted with.
I think I know you. How about that?
I think you may also, but I'll keep my voice mysterious.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect.
Awesome. So thank you again for joining, Lizzie. I'm super excited to have you here. And thanks again for your trust. I start every podcast the same way. It's really interesting to hear people's backgrounds and how they got into the industry, but I'd really love to hear you, your background and how you got into ad tech.
Well, I got into it the way probably most people get into their careers, by accident. I moved to New York after college. I went to school in New Orleans. Have you ever been there, God?
I actually have.
You have? Okay, another clue. So I moved to New York, not knowing a single soul, and decided to, like, I needed a job. That was it, right? I knew I needed to pay my bills. So I got a headhunter that specialized in helping out Southern people. She was a nice Southern lady. And I got three interviews. It was Better Homes and Gardens, Sotheby's, and David Yurman. And guess which one I got? Better Homes and Gardens.
David Yurman.
No, I didn't get David Yurman, which you would think, I'm Southern, I'm blonde, you know?
I mean, it's also David Yurman.
It's David Yurman. I know. Well, I was kind of bummed. So anyways, I started out as a sales assistant at Better Homes and Gardens. And my core function, this is real, by the way, was to make sure the fax machine was hot. Because, you know, fax machines, and I'm sorry for the youth listening, fax machines back then in 2004 took like 30 minutes to heat up. So I had to get there at 8:30 a.m. and heat up the fax machine.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah. Like now you'd be like sued.
2004 was like $4 minimum wage.
Exactly. Well, exactly. Right. So I was there. And by the way, I don't know if you remember, God, but Better Homes and Gardens was like the thing. That was like the biggest magazine. So it was really fun to work there. At first, I was like, what is this industry? It's sort of silly. And then true story, I had a boss, he knows who he is, that one time showed me his paycheck. And I thought, oh, I can do this. So I decided to get into ad sales. I sold literally 1/8 size ads in the back of windows and walls. And then from there, I went to Bauer and sold J14 magazine. And then I went to Elle magazine. So by the way, God, at this point, I'm almost 30. So I'm not even in ad tech yet. And I'm almost 30 for any of those people out there that feel like they, you know, are, I don't know, have wasted time. So I go to Elle magazine and fashion magazines were just not for me. And I started to kind of see the writing in the wall, right? Like the internet's a real thing and it's, you know, it's really sticking. So I'm G-chatting a friend one day and she says, I have a friend named Jess Nuremberg, one of my best friends, at a company called brand.net and she's hiring. So I go and meet with her at a coffee shop and I sit down and I have my big speech ready and I go, I sell integrated and I know everything. And she goes, can I just stop you? You have no clue what you're talking about. You do not know the internet. You do not know digital and that's okay. Neither did I. I will teach you. And we sat there for like 2 hours and she taught me about portals, if you remember those, portals and networks and publishers and walked me through everything. And she said, I'm going to hire you and I'm going to train you. And then it started.
That's kind of how I started.
Really?
For me, it started, yeah, it started at a print. So it was a predominantly print. It was like pure print, old school warehouses of nothing but paper. And then this really small department that focused on digital. And then we were out there and I'm like, I don't know what an impression is. How am I supposed to sell this? What do you mean it shows 3 million times? Like at the time we were selling it as like an annual commitment. I didn't really know. It's like, oh, you know, we got a deal from Ford and it's $1 million. It's over 12 months and we're just going to deliver it. And then we had some really smart girl in ad operations. It's like, oh, don't worry. I'll handle it. Like, don't worry about it. I'm like, I have no clue what you guys are doing, but I just sold it.
Yeah.
And I'm totally happy because I'm getting a bonus.
Totally.
And but I had no idea what I was selling.
No. And that was sort of the same with her. And by the way, at the time, I mean, brand.net, which became Velasys, by the way, that's why it's probably confusing if you looked at my LinkedIn. It was one of the first networks. Big shout out to the founders there. And the woman that ran sales, Melissa Goidell, I don't know if you know her. She's like an OG Yahoo person. So we were sort of ahead of our time. Okay. But I think we got into a little bit of financial something, but Velasys ended up acquiring us. And that also, again, talking about sort of careers and how they're just sort of interesting. We were this tiny startup and Velasys is this big, huge shopper organization. And because we were this, we knew digital, they thought we were geniuses. So like next thing you know, like there are these guys coming in that are like, you know, 60s, 70s or whatever, looking to us, oh, can you take us to meet? So we were treated so well in that organization. And I actually learned a lot about shopper marketing too, that it was just awesome. And I have a lot to thank, you know, Jess for and bringing me over and teaching me all of that. So then I was there for a couple of years, had a great time. But you know what I really missed is I missed the branding. The beginning of my career was the branding. I think I'm a marketer first sort of salesperson. And I wanted to get back to that. So I went to a company called Federated. And I'm sure you remember Federated. Another one that was a little bit ahead of its time. And I think a lot of us have probably been at those companies where you're like, oh, if it had just started a few years later. At the time, it was sort of trying to monetize blogger, you know, the former influencers, bloggers, I think we were calling them. And I was there for a couple of years. And that was also a really great experience. And then finally, I landed where I am now, Cargo. And how that happened was Ryan McConville, who, you know, has like a huge job now at NBC, was my boss at J14 magazine. And the marketing guy at J14 magazine was a guy that's also one of my best friends named Ed Romaine, who runs all of Turner Sports. So these are really, you know, powerful people now. But he reached out to both of us. He was president of Cargo at the time. He goes, let's bring the gang back together. Let's bring J14 magazine back together. So I said, hell yeah. Like, right? So I came in and they explained Cargo to me, and Cargo was everything that I'd been wanting, and not to like brown nose Harry, my CEO, not or my company, but it brought together art and ad tech. And that's exactly sort of the place I like to be, is a center of both, where I am passionate about the tech side of things, but I'm also very passionate about the bigger branding mission and understanding that the creative is what the consumer sees. And what I did not like about the early days of my being in ad tech was it was just about KPIs and no one ever talked about the creative. And it felt like such a obvious miss. And so now I've been at Cargo like 8 years.
You bring up a good point. It's years ago, everybody did just talk about ad tech as kind of like the delivery engine or the buying engine or the selling engine, but it wasn't really the creative piece of it, if that makes sense. I mean, that's how I felt. It was just like, oh, how do you buy? You use this. How do you sell? You do it this way. But there wasn't really a creative kind of mix into the platforms, but you're starting to see that more and more now, like the importance of creative solutions, customized placements, et cetera. What's different about Cargo and what they do in the market? And then we can go into some of the other topics too, but like what really sets Cargo apart?
Oh, gosh, so many things. I mean, to tell you the most boring thing about Cargo is our financials. And sort of a weird thing for me to even talk about, but I think it's important to talk about it. We've never taken outside money. It's wholly owned by our CEO and employees. And I think when you know a company's financials, I think in general, when you know how someone's like bread is buttered, you can understand their motives. We never got cheap PE money. We never had to like go long tail, you know, think about it. If we had been beholden to, you know, some, you know, bankers, and by the way, I like bankers, but a few years ago, we would have probably gone long tail, right? We never had to do that. So I think that understanding the financials of Cargo is really important, understanding our mission and the fact that we've been able to stay in our lane. We are a mobile first company. We were a mobile only company for about, I don't know, like 18 years. Again, going back to the fact that we didn't have to move out of a lane to cheap, easy money. We could stay firm in what we believe in. And then over COVID, we went on a bit of a buying spree, which has been awesome. I mean, because, you know, think about it. From a sales perspective, all you want is new products, right? We acquired a company called Stitcher Ads, which got us into the e-com space. And I'll say, you know, a few years before we went into sort of the buying spree, if you had said like, what are our Achilles heels, I don't even know, whatever. It would have been some of the e-com social stuff, right? We didn't have that access and video. We just really didn't have video because again, going back to it, when we only work with a handful of publishers, we have an invite-only marketplace. You can't really get like good quality pre-roll. Like you can, but it's hard and it's expensive, right? And so we didn't have that. So those were the two things we needed. So again, we acquired a company called Stitcher Ads, which is now called Cargo Commerce, which has been amazing and brought us into a whole new level of stickiness with brands and advertisers because we're sort of their in-house trading and creative team for social and commerce. So that's been a fascinating business to learn. The other side is a little thing called CTV, which I know you talk a lot about. And we didn't just want to do it to do it. Harry, again, my CEO, he's reluctant to do anything that we can't sort of cargo-fy and make better. So he found a company. Well, I don't know if it was him. It was probably someone on the team. Like, I don't know. Everyone. I want to give someone credit. I don't know who it was. Found a company called VideoByte. And VideoByte is fascinating. I'm going to say the word AI, so it makes me really smart. But they have a really cool AI tool that's patent pending, by the way, that allows us to scan the content and then create overlays or go into ad breaks and things of that nature. So you can actually have a really solid contextual, you know, marriage with the CTV programming. And not only that, but it's bringing our creative chops to CTV. I mean, I think that, you know, the days of having to spend $1 billion and have JLo as your star or whatever else is gone. You can throw me a Facebook or Meta video or a, you know, Google bumper or honestly something you shot in your iPhone and I can create a beautiful CTV ad placement for you for free.
Somebody else I spoke to talked about that and I'm trying to remember who, because we're a few episodes
behind
where I'm launching. not a competitor. I'm trying to recall who it was, but they mentioned something around previously used to really depend on production teams and companies to create this like super crazy video. But as we're starting to see like the rise of obviously content creators, that the need and the appetite for super professionally shot videos and audio is no longer needed. Like people actually want the natural feeling when watching a movie or a show or a commercial that it's just normal people like you and I. And not, you know, perfectly chiseled models on the screen. No, they actually want to relate to the people on the screen. So I could see how that becomes more and more common moving forward in the future. What else do you think is going to happen? And we'll kind of go back to the milestones piece of the podcast. But what type of innovation and changes do you see happening over the next, you know, 6 to 18 months, just in the space overall?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
What do you see as like a direction that we're heading in?
I don't know. I mean, I know you said be positive. I'll try to be positive. Can I be negative for a minute?
Yeah, you can. Okay, I'll be quickly negative. You're totally on my podcast, Lizzie, but yeah.
I'll be quickly negative. What stresses me out a little bit is sort of the death of the publisher, man. It's stressing me out. It stresses me out from a societal implication. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to blame Google for the whole cookie or Apple. I don't know who to blame, but that's sort of, to be honest, stressing me out. And if I had to guess, because of The, you know, the publishing world getting hit pretty hard, and the, you know, the maybe the final death of the cookie, if, you know, it's been going on for years at this point, I think dollars will continue to shift into CTV and into video, because again, advertisers just aren't going to get what they once got, I think, from some of the, you know, standard display stuff.
That's a good point. I mean, I do see connected TV obviously continuing to grow. That's something that I follow really closely just because it's my world. But the death of the publisher is so hard for me to believe, even though I see it in financials whenever people release their earnings. I look and I go, man, that's not looking good, or it's looking challenging. I don't know what we're going to do with that, because we obviously need really good publishers and we need good news sources and we need good content to read.
No, I know. And the thing that's scary is that, like, it's so funny. I was asking younger people, it's okay, I do like the youth, but much younger people, I think they get their news from TikTok. So that's, I mean, seriously. So that's, I think, you know, part of it. But yeah, outside of billionaires owning, you kind of need a nice billionaire that wants to buy up some publications and just lose money every year.
Yeah. If you know what I mean? I mean, I think we already have a few billionaires that have bought up a few news sites.
Yeah, some have gone to the right. There's a few. There's a couple that have got, I need benevolent billionaires.
Yeah.
That's what
yeah. Mean. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to have non-biased news.
Well, totally. I know. But sorry for that. I don't know. I mean, if I say AI 10 times, will that make me super smart? Hopefully. But I think, you know, AI will continue to be something that we're talking about and will hopefully get better in many ways. I know that there's also the sort of this fear side of AI, but from a creative perspective, we've even seen, like, if we can take an ad and with an AI tool, be able to have someone like you or me speaking in 10 different languages and deploying them accordingly. How cool is that?
Right. Look, I don't think it's going to kill all jobs.
No, me neither.
Can I say that? I think it's going to empower everybody with a solution that's, like, really strong. And I think it's going to make things better. And I think maybe in the short term, there might be a negative impact. But I think long term, mm-hmm. people will realize that there needs to be a human touch behind
it. Oh, of course. I mean, don't even,
so, you know.
Yeah. No, I do too. I think even the driverless cars, I am like, yeah, we need humans too. But I agree with you. I think that a human plus a human that's well-trained in some of these tools, plus these tools, makes everything really strong. Absolutely.
I mean, speaking of self-driving cars, I don't trust it. I know some people do. I don't trust it. I trust myself more. I trust the warnings, the beeps, and the lights.
I mean, you know, one of my team said it best. I couldn't stop laughing. He said, we either need to be like all self-driver or none, but he's like, I can't have like a self-driver plus like my like wacky uncle on the road together. Like, that doesn't work. Right? You can't have humans and machines. We need to either lean into one or like the other.
Yeah. Cause that you allow two machines to communicate with each other. And there are those signals, right? For them to say, don't collide.
Exactly.
Don't make a mistake.
Exactly.
I think the whole thing is super intriguing to me. And AI is something that I also think is going to be a big piece of our industry moving forward. I mean, you hear it from everybody. Everybody is talking about it. Everybody's building around it. Whether it's, you know, how do you traffic a campaign by typing in specific prompts from a company called Market? Like, how do you optimize your creative based off of AI generated words and themes and images? Like, it's all super awesome.
Yeah.
But I just don't know how it's going to end up being.
No, me neither. And actually, I mean, this might be, I don't know when this podcast comes out, but we, in collaboration with Media Hub and Mullen today, launched a pro bono campaign for something called Change the Ref that Wall Street Journal just picked it up and Kara Swisher picked it up. So I'm pretty excited about it. But Change the Ref is an organization started by the Parkland shooting victims' parents. And the parents have allowed their dead children's voices to be recreated with AI. And the ad unit we created for them, it shows like you're reading on your phone and you see a cargo ad, an article, and all of a sudden a button pops up that says you have a voicemail. And so you're like, oh my gosh, what is this? And we're trying to reach legislators. And you click on it and it says like, hi, my name is Joaquin. I was killed in the Parkland shooting massacre. So really powerful stuff. And these parents are like, amazing, but just an example of how you can, you know, utilize the power of AI to make a big shock and awe to hopefully bring about change. Not to be depressed.
So, no, you're not depressing. I mean, I think it's actually a really good thing that to do that. I mean, it definitely needs to be shared that this is an issue, and we obviously need gun control. We obviously need mental health services. I'm all for all of that. And I think they're all tied in together. And so I don't think that that's a bad initiative at all or negative. I think something that everybody should talk about and be aware of.
Yeah. And we were proud to do it. So, yep.
Lizzie, question for you. So you've obviously worked at some amazing companies and Cargo has done a lot, obviously not just for the market, but for you as well. What was like your biggest milestone thing that you were most proud of in your career so far?
It's more, I think, it's going to be like really good, this answer, but it's really true. I think all of the people that have worked for me that I've helped improve their lives, like, you know, people that came right out of college and I helped coach or mentor and now have big jobs. It's definitely the most fulfilling part of my job for 100% is sort of mentoring and coaching and that kind of thing. So I would say that is probably my biggest win.
Do you find like, so obviously like myself over X amount of years, and I don't like to say many years, but X amount of years, do you find that you continue to be in touch with all those people you work with in some capacity? Or because I'm super into networking and building relationships, and old colleagues I text on occasion, even if I wasn't even that close. Like I'd send them a LinkedIn or a text and just, hey, how's it going over there? You guys doing okay? Do you do that with all your former, I guess, direct reports or managers in the past?
I would say like 95%. And if I, and the other 5%, there's no reason. I have a great relationship with all of them. It's probably like time has passed or I've forgotten, but yeah, of course. And by the way, too, like that's what social media is good for, right? Like love it or hate it. You can just shoot someone a DM and be like, I'm thinking of you. I saw this. This is hilarious. You know, things like that. So yeah, no, I definitely stay in touch with all of them. And I think the diversity of the people that I know has enriched me so much. That was the one thing about when I first got my first job ever that I loved the most about working is because like in your normal personal life, it's like the whole birds of a feather, you know, thing. You tend to just be around people that are like you or look like you and are similar age, similar, you know, demographic, you know, all that kind of thing. And when you work, you're opened up to all different kinds of people because you're just at a company together, right? So pretty early on, like one of my friends was like 50. And I was like 23, you know what I mean? So I think it's great. And I think that's, you know, part of the fun of working and part of the fun of having teams is having teams with various people with different backgrounds and just learning from them. And like, as you said, continuing to follow up with them wherever they go and watching them succeed from afar.
You know, you bring up a good point that obviously we're going to say age gap, right? Like when you talk about people who have been in this industry for a long time, we're actually not talking that long. Right. So like even for me to speak to someone like Brian O'Kelly was actually super cool for me. And I think I even said, I feel like I'm in the presence of God himself because I'm like, this guy is like amazing. Like he actually created it. Now he's doing a cool initiative, but like talking to like Joe Zawadzki and talking to like Lauren Wetzel and all these people that are like so influential, Matt Barash and Corey Greenberg and all these guys. I'm like, some of these people I know in real life, they don't even know I'm doing this. Others have no idea who I am. But it kind of puts me in this position where I'm like, okay, tell me your experience because I can learn from it. And like I'm taking little bits and pieces from each person I talk to, and it's actually helping me become a better employee, a better contributor to the industry. And so I love that you keep in touch with everyone. How important do you think those relationships are in our industry?
Oh, I mean, incredibly. I mean, I think in the industry, ours is probably even more so. And I'll tell you, well, first of all, Brian Spicy on LinkedIn. I don't know him, but he's a good follow. Yeah, I think relationships in general are so hugely important, right? I mean, when I was at Marco Island, sometimes I'll get like, you know, sometimes you're like, I hate my work. I hate my, you know, all that, you know, you get down. I'm going to move to the country with my husband, my kid, my dog, and, you know, throw away our phones. But when I was in Marco Island, I laughed so hard for like 48 hours. And I even one night had like a frenemy dinner where I went out to dinner with all of my competitors, like, you know, other salespeople that are like direct competitors. Who gives a shit? We just like had fun and drank wine all night. So I think it keeps you going, man. Like, yeah, it's good for business, right? Like good. Yeah, it's good for business. Obviously you want, you know, I want marketers to like me. Well, I guess I want marketers to respect me first and foremost and like me second, but take that away. It makes it fun. And like, I left feeling super energized and sort of excited. So yeah, I mean, I think the relationships are really important, but going back to what you said about, you know, no one knows that much. So my sister's in the industry her name's Katie Black, quick plug. And she actually worked at Cargo twice. When she moved, she's much younger than I am. So when she first moved to New York, she was working in vocal performance. And she's like, stressed out. I want a promotion, blah, blah, blah. And I said, let me tell you about an industry you don't have to get old in to run shit. And so she came to Cargo and she was on the pub side team. So yeah, I mean, I think that that's the cool thing about the internet is like, you can go to maternity leave and come back and everything's changed. So anytime I think anyone feels like imposter syndrome or any of that, or like, I don't know enough, like no one knows enough. It's all new all the time.
Talking of imposter syndrome, welcome to my world.
I'm sure, God.
Yo, ATG, let me ask you, I'm looking at this algorithm, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, look, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. I know it looks like I'm really wise from my profile picture with the crown, but you're going to need to go to someone smarter, like Ari. Yeah,
let me go ChatGPT this
morning. Right. Can you go to someone who actually knows how all this works in the technical side of things? I'm just really likable.
Totally.
So it's funny because it's the same. I try to learn from people like you and people from the industry all the time. It's hard for you to keep up. I think as long as you have a general understanding, I was just messaging Alex over at Google the other day and I ran a poll, said, can you explain what this privacy sandbox thing is? And 78% of people said no. Like this is an industry changing initiative, something that's happening across the board. And almost 80% of people don't know how to speak to it. So I messaged him and I sent him a screenshot and he's going to work on sending something over. But I told him, I was like, look, this is not good for you. This is not good for Google. This is not good for the industry. Like you're going to have to spend some time and investment educating the general population of how this works. Because if you don't, then everyone's going to immediately create a response, whether it's positive or negative, without really knowing the details. Right. So like, you got to educate us.
No, totally. I mean, and what does Einstein say? What did he say? Like, if you can't say it simply, you don't understand
exactly.
It. I think that's so true. So yeah, it's a good point.
Well, I mean, Lizzie, this kind of brings us to the end of the podcast, but I feel like we could like chat for another 3 hours.
I know. Anything else? I mean,
I guess the last part is, you know, how do you keep up to date with all the trends? But I know you go to a lot of industry events and obviously know a lot of people, but you know, how do you stay up to date on trends in your particular piece of the ad tech world?
I think what you said was right. I go to a lot of industry things. I really like them. I like people. So it works for me listening. I like seeing people on stage, like in real life. I read a lot of the trades, some weeks better than others, right? Depends what you have going on. It starts to sort of pile up. I was really, and I don't want to, you know, I was really into Twitter, but I've sort of moved on from there for now. So I'm on Threads, but like, I wish the ad tech threads would get a little bit meatier.
I don't know why. Every time I post something there, nothing really happens.
Yeah, why? You need to talk to someone because I want to figure that out too. Because you need.
I spent like maybe 3 weeks copying everything that I posted on, you know, X or Twitter and putting it on Threads. And it was like, blink, one like, no comments. I'm like, this is really weird. Let me just keep trying. And I kept trying. And then finally, I'm like, I give up. I feel like.
Yeah. Where's who's part of the crew on Twitter? Where's like Terry? Where's Matt?
Are they not? Everybody's there, but I think. And I think they all, and I'll send you some of their accounts. Well, you could probably find them too, but generally they're all there. I just think the action isn't as good.
Yeah. The action isn't as good. It's true. And then honestly, I find LinkedIn to be like soul sucking is my issue.
That's why I'm bringing memes to LinkedIn.
It's so bad, man. Right? It's like depressing. I'm like, are we? And not only boring. I'm like, I might have to start bullying people. Like, I feel like I need to bully people. Like, it's like you cannot write these things. It's so embarrassing.
I mean, I think there was a time where I sat there and I was about to put a meme on LinkedIn. I'm like, God, should I not?
Do it.
Am I going to do it? And then I did it, and then like people were like, oh, this is amazing. I'm like, okay, let me try another one. And I'm like, okay, let me do a mix of news. You know, promotion for the podcast or promotion for Slack, you know, some polls. So like now I just do a mix, but I got to get into a better rhythm of just like actually scheduling stuff because this is like an awesome hobby, but I also get sidetracked with real life. So I need to be more consistent.
No more real life for you. Only cool.
I did the math. Like LinkedIn. If you had like $7 or $8 million, I'd be good.
$7 or $8 million. No, you wouldn't. You'd be like, you'd be worried about your health or something. I have a theory that anxieties, you pass one anxiety to the other.
That's true.
Like you get rid of the money anxiety, you start thinking you have something wrong with you.
True.
I'm telling you.
That is true.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, Lizzie, This has been awesome. And I love chatting with you, by the way. I could totally see us hanging out at an event.
I know.
Shooting the shit.
Well, why don't you come to Cannes? Find me in Cannes. That's the event.
I will find out. And I tell everybody, if I ever feel comfortable, you know, telling you who I am, I usually don't say anything. I'll just hand you a sticker.
Oh!
And then just no reaction, no nothing. It's just like, here's a sticker. And then I did that at CS three years ago. And it was like, holy shit, it's you. I'm like,
I have two friends that claim they know you, by the way.
Oh, well, I'm sure there are. There are some that know me.
Oh, well, I get mad. I'm like, I believe you, sure, but B, don't tell me.
Well, it's also like, it ruins it. Like, imagine you knew. Yeah, you knew that I was like the guy on the other side of the Zoom call, like, do you mind sending me documentation on this?
Yeah, no, like, you're like Santa. I don't want to know, but here's the thing. I thought you were at Marco Island because you pinged me right after Marco Island, and then I was like, oh my God, I was so charming.
I'm everywhere. Well,
I was congratulating myself for being charming to a stranger, but
sure, you know, yeah. Take it when you can get it, right, Lizzie? You're like, I'll take it. But thank you so much for being here,
thank you
for joining, and looking forward to seeing you around soon.
Yep. Bye.
Take care. Bye bye. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the AdTech God Pod, a podcast for the people about the people that make ad tech great. Stay connected with me for more insights, trends, and interviews in the realm of ad tech. Don't miss out on our latest updates, so follow me on X, Instagram, and connect with me on LinkedIn. Don't forget, ATG Slack community has insights, networking opportunities, and jobs. Keep the conversation going and stay at the forefront of ad tech innovation.